Coming up, David Taraschuk on using scripture to settle disputes that might otherwise end up in court. And Christian filmmakers, Dan Lothian reports from Nashville, Tennessee on the growing success of low-budget feature films marketed through churches.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Religious freedom is under serious and sustained assault around the world, according to a new report by the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. The commission recommended that the State Department add to the list of the world's worst abusers a number of new countries, including Egypt, Iraq, Nigeria, Pakistan, and Syria. The report highlighted rising anti-Semitic and anti-Muslim bigotry in Europe, the persecution of Muslims in Myanmar, and violence in Nigeria carried out by the Muslim extremist group Boko Haram. The commission also singled out India, where Hindu nationalist groups have increasingly targeted Muslims and Christians. In honor of Pope Francis's Year of Mercy, 6,000 homeless people will travel to Rome in November to attend a mass in St. Peter's Square and a special session with the Pope. They'll come from all over Europe. The French affiliate of the international Catholic charity Caritas is supporting the effort. Meanwhile, 101 Syrian and Iraqi refugees arrived in Rome this week. The group is made up of both Muslims and Christians and includes 44 children. Another 97 refugees will travel to Rome in February. The groups are sponsored by the Catholic charity Sant'Egidio. The organization aims to house 1,000 Syrian refugees. The United Methodist Church, the second largest Protestant denomination in the U.S., is holding its general conference in Portland, Oregon, beginning May 10th. On the eve of the meeting, 15 United Methodist clergy and clergy candidates have come out as gay. The announcement comes just before church representatives are expected to consider new rules allowing clergy to be openly gay and to perform same-sex weddings. Currently, church rules prohibit both. A historic Serbian Orthodox church in New York City burned down last Sunday. On the very day, the congregation and Orthodox Christians around the world celebrated Easter. The Serbian Orthodox Cathedral of St. Sava was built in the early 1850s and is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Only a charred skeleton of the church remains. Fire officials suspect the church's caretakers accidentally placed unextinguished candles used during the service in a cardboard box. Arbitration is an alternative for settling disputes that has sometimes been controversial, yet there's been a rise in arbitration that's religious in nature. As David Taraschuk reports, it's rising even among organizations that engage in purely secular business.
Pamela Prescott has been an educator for 38 years, a teacher who rose to be principal at a Christian school. Then things went badly wrong between her and her employers. A school board member phoned her at home.
He said, we don't need you to come back to campus at all. We are dismissing you. It was a very arduous and a very painful thing to go through.
Cherie Spivey lost her son, Nick, when he was 20 years old and addicted to drugs. He died after she sent him to a Christian rehabilitation center.
It was the worst, and still is. It's just, a lot of times it's just hard to believe that happened, that Nick's not here anymore.
What the Prescott and Spivey cases have in common is that when each woman wanted to take legal action over their losses, their way was blocked by the old but rarely discussed practice of Christian arbitration.
I didn't know what that was. I didn't have a clue. I had heard of mediation before, but Christian arbitration I had not heard of.
It's a poor witness to our God and to our faith if our first resort is to take things to court.
Bryce Thomas, as well as being a licensed attorney in North Carolina, is a nationally prominent Christian arbitrator who works with the Institute of Christian Conciliation. The Institute's rules govern most of the Christian arbitrations that take place in America.
You might work with both sides and you bring them together in a safe environment where they can have the most open, candid conversation and face all the stuff between them. But one might owe the other money. And they say, we need somebody to decide what is fair. We can't arrive at what is fair. We're going to tell you all the facts, and then you make a ruling, much like a judge.
Arbitration has long been accepted as an alternative for settling disputes without resorting to a court of law. Recently, though, there's been controversy over companies and organizations using it to avoid their legal obligations, and demands have grown for new laws to ban abuses. But however arbitration may have been used or misused, it has rarely been seen as having anything to do with religion. That, too, has been changing.
What's less well known is the rise in arbitration that's religious in nature, and specifically Christian arbitration, and it's been rising among organizations that engage in purely secular business, like this company selling hardwoods in the Pacific Northwest. Scroll down all the terms and conditions, and you'll see you're agreeing to submit any dispute you may have with the company to Christian arbitration, held in Seattle here under Christian conciliation rules.
Christian arbitration is said to have biblical precedent. The Apostle Paul insisted in his first letter to the Corinthians that the early church members should avoid turning to civil legal authorities for resolving their internal disputes, and instead come to a settlement among themselves. Thomas and other arbitrators like him use precepts laid down in the Old and New Testaments to guide their rulings. One of the nation's few experts in this specialty is in California. He's a Jewish rabbi, Michael Helfand, who's a law professor at Pepperdine University.
At its best, religious arbitration is an opportunity for two parties who have shared religious values to resolve those disputes in accordance with their religious values.
Professor Helfand emphasizes the constitutional separation of church and state. He says this prevents courts from taking sides in a difference of religious opinion or practice between, for instance, a faith institution and its employees.
And if you didn't have religious arbitration, you'd be saying to all these employees, there's nowhere else for you to seek justice.
The case of Pam Prescott seemed to raise such an issue of religious differences when she was fired from the school where she was principal, and which we have agreed not to name at Prescott's request.
I'm a biblically based believer, so my religion is the scripture.
Prescott's contract of employment required her to waive her normal right to sue for wrongful dismissal if aggrieved.
The contract also made this Christian arbitration, conciliation, mediation, and arbitration mandatory. I did not have the opportunity to take it to court.
Though she had signed a waiver, she was upset to find her employers dragging their feet for years over the Bible-based alternative that was stipulated. But eventually, both sides did get to a formal arbitration presided over by Bryce Thomas.
I had something like 20 or 30 or 40 witnesses that I listened to, there were also probably thousands of pages of documents.
7 days it went on that long, with calling witnesses, and before this we had to have depositions, and just like you would do it in a civil court. And a ruling was rendered by the arbitrator who ruled in my favor.
Arbitrator Thomas ordered the school to pay Prescott about $160,000 to cover lost income and damage to her reputation.
We're not there to please either party. We're trying to render a decision that is God-pleasing, first of all, and secondly, blesses the parties, but we got to deal with truth.
The school certainly wasn't pleased with the arbitrator's findings and tried to appeal it, surprisingly enough, in the civil courts. The appeal failed, but Prescott's legal costs wiped out almost every dollar she'd been awarded. The school declined to discuss the case with us on the grounds that it concerned actions by a past administration. The Spivey family's distressing arbitration experience came when Cherie Spivey tried to sue the Christian Drug Rehab Teen Challenge for the wrongful death of her son.
I wanted someone to answer, you know, maybe, you know, you all told me Nick was doing really well. What happened? What went wrong? He's only been there 30 days. Just so many questions, you know, and they were refusing to give me any information.
Spivey discovered that her son had signed a waiver when he was being admitted to the rehab, most likely still high on drugs. It said that he or his estate, should he die, would give up all rights to sue Teen Challenge in court and would instead undergo Christian arbitration.
My attorney would not be able to speak at all. She could attend, but she would have to sit in the back and not talk. It was led by all Christians, and to me it felt like we would go in there and pray, do Bible study, kiss and make up, and I wasn't willing to do that.
Eventually, the matter was settled, at least in financial terms, with Teen Challenge paying out an undisclosed sum of money. Teen Challenge declined to comment on the case to us. Spivey remains unsatisfied about the facts surrounding her oldest child's death and frustrated in her efforts to find them out.
They don't give you the opportunity to get justice. Some things you can't just sweep under the rug and say, you know, I'm sorry that happened. let's move forward from here. Some things, I'm sorry, is just not enough. And ultimately, that's what Christian arbitration is, you know, everybody just finds a way to get along.
The fact that we rely primarily on Holy Scripture, I don't think that needs improving.
All the same, aggrieved parties in the religious arbitration process can often be left feeling that the system too easily works against them. At the least, it leaves them wary, certainly about the religious label.
I haven't lost faith in Christianity or Christians. It's just that I am more careful with the idea of the name doesn't mean anything.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is David Tereschuk reporting.
Now, the growing success of faith-based feature films. Dan Lothian reports from Nashville, Tennessee, on Christian filmmakers making religious-themed movies. They market them through churches and are making many of their investors very happy.
On every movie set, you'll have lights, camera, action. But this crew has another daily ritual, praying. You're behind the scenes of the faith-based film War Room, released last year. It went on to become a major hit with a story about the power of prayer. The feature film was released by the Kendrick brothers, who also wrote, produced, and directed it. They are two former associate pastors from Albany, Georgia, who started with a small outreach film for their church and now have a number of big screen successes.
You're finding in the last decade more organic faith films being made, and the production quality is getting better and better every year that goes by. We have access now to some of the special effects gear at, you know, for a few thousand dollars that Hollywood used to only have for, you know, $500,000. And so people are realizing this is a powerful, impactful, legitimate genre that's touching lives. It's not just pastors and pulpits, which we need, but it's now telling stories and parables, if you will, visually on a movie screen.
Their first project, made for $20,000, was Flywheel, a story about a dishonest used car salesman who turned his life around. Dozens of church volunteers helped make it happen, but they barely delivered it on time.
By the time we finish the edit and burn the first DVD to take to the theater, we realize we haven't even watched it all the way through.
It sold out the first night, and to the surprise of the theater manager, kept doing well.
He said, you know, can we extend it another week? And he kept calling us every Monday saying we want to extend Flywheel another
week. 6 weeks.
They've now released 5 films. Their budgets have increased with every new project, but their mission remains the same.
We do ministry through movies and desiring to impact people's lives at a heart level.
That's what many of these movies have in common. They are unapologetically Christian. You don't have to read between the lines to find faith. They only make up a fraction of the overall feature film market, about 1% last year and a little more than 2% the year before. But those numbers represent hundreds of millions of dollars, and business is booming. War Room was made for $3 million. Its domestic total, $68 million. God's Not Dead, another big feature film about standing up for your beliefs, was produced by PureFlix Entertainment for $2 million. It's made $61 million.
We definitely didn't think God's Not Dead was going to be as big.
What's driving these numbers? Michael Scott, a partner and producer at PureFlix, says the message resonates with a wide faith audience that has been hungry for good biblical content.
If you look at, you know, the American population, you know, half or more, they said they confirm that they're Christians. So it's a huge niche. And these films, I think we're just seeing the beginnings of what these films can do at the box office.
Churches play a big role too. Influential pastors are often consulted before movies are released. They in turn promote them to their congregations and often buy up large blocks of tickets.
Ultimately, in order to get the grassroots really working and moving on these films, we need the pastors, and they're the gatekeepers. And so if the film won't go past the gatekeepers, it's never going to reach the consumer.
People need to wake up to the fact in Hollywood that there's an audience out there.
Actor Kevin Sorbo, who identifies himself as Christian, is not only known as the star of the 1990s TV series Hercules, but also for roles in faith-based films like Soul Surfer, Abel's Field, Gallows, and God's Not Dead, where he played the role of an atheist philosophy professor.
She died believing a lie. She died believing that someone out there loved her even while he was strangling her to death. God who would allow that is not worth believing in.
I like to stop all the time now because of the faith-based movies. People say, please make more of that. They come up to me and they say, we love this. We want the more. Please tell Hollywood to make more like this.
Some criticize the message as propaganda, too in your face, and many movie critics have delivered poor reviews. But investors drawn by faith and finances are taking a much different view. The success of these films has created new opportunities. Bill Reeves is one of the founders of a company called Working Title Agency, located in the affluent Nashville, Tennessee suburb of Franklin. Reeves and his partners launched 2 hedge funds to help independent filmmakers turn creative Christian ideas into reality.
It allows high net worth people who are interested in investing in faith film, a lot of them believers and Christians, to really have a double bottom line. We can show them that they can make money by not betting on just one film, but a slate of them, and then in return, know that their money went to spread the message of Christ around the world, which is really why we're all in this business in the first place.
What percentage would you say are really driven by ministry?
I'd say of our investors, about 80% of them are interested in the double bottom line, and 20% are just interested in the return on the investment.
There's something else in the mix. These films often come with study guides for churches and home groups, religious books, merchandising, and licensing. It all adds up.
The investors look at it as a way to sort of hedge their investment because they know that they're going to be drawing revenue not just from the screen and the DVD, but the products that go with it.
Hollywood has been paying close attention. Small budgets with big returns is a good business model.
Anytime you get 35 times back on your money in Hollywood, they're going to wake up a little bit.
And when War Room knocked Universal Studios' movie straight out of Compton from its number one spot over Labor Day weekend, it did not go unnoticed.
We were thrilled with the response. You know, the word of mouth was like wildfire.
Major Hollywood studios have formed divisions to focus on this growing genre. Affirm Films, a division of Sony Pictures, says it has invested tens of millions of dollars in the Kendrick Brothers brand, which, by the way, also includes that first movie, Flywheel. Rick Peluso is the company's senior vice president.
We know what our audience wants.
We know how to market to them, and we're out there developing and producing content on our own to meet that need.
Peluso made those comments at the recent annual National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville. The city, widely known for its country music, is also where many top Christian artists are based, along with companies that produce faith-related content. It's the perfect backdrop for this convention of vendors, speakers, workshops, and movie screenings.
The NRB was once all about radio, but the overall media landscape has changed, and so too has this organization. For the last 3 years, there's been a big emphasis on faith films and making it in the movie business.
NRB President and CEO Jerry Johnson says it's paying off.
We've got 15-20 studios here this morning, and we're pitching scripts. NRB members are pitching scripts to these major studios. We had last year a major studio picked up an option on one of the Christian scripts that was proposed. And then in the afternoon, it's professional development, good acting, good directing, good distribution. So we're all in.
Not every movie will hit a home run. In fact, some have lost money. But there's a track record that the industry says proves what is happening in theaters all across the country is not a fluke. More of these films are on the way or in theaters now, like the sequel, God's Not Dead 2.
You're on your own.
So what's the good news?
I don't like to lose.
The question now, will there be greater outside pressure to perform? And will Hollywood exert more influence over the message?
I think you're always going to have that problem. I think you get big studios that come in, you know, they have their machine. But this audience and what they want is different. As soon as you deviate from what people view as the biblical, that's when you start to lose the church.
And to lose the church is to cut off the very pipeline that helps fill seats, move related products, and multiply that double bottom line. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Dan Lothian in Nashville.
Daniel Berrigan died last week. He was a Jesuit priest, a poet, and writer who vigorously opposed the Vietnam War and all war. The Catholic peace movement he and his brother helped inspire, the demonstrations and anti-war actions led to arrests and prison, but he never gave up his conviction that following the gospel requires trying to make peace. Father Berrigan was 94 years old. The U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum gave its highest honor this week to U.S. Representative and civil rights leader John Lewis. Lewis is an ordained Baptist minister who has served in Congress for decades. He received the Elie Wiesel Award. Lewis was severely beaten attempting to march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama in 1965 on what's known as Bloody Sunday. The Holocaust Museum also observed Yom HaShoah, or Holocaust Remembrance Day, this week. Visitors read the names of people who were killed in the Holocaust. We spoke with Colleen Grego, a middle school history teacher from Hilton, New York, and Zella Shabasson and her son, Michael Rosenberg.
Fega Ajman died Auschwitz, age 7.
Abram Arzelot, born in Odessa, died in Odessa, 1941, age 6.
Verka Shine, born 1937, Prisov, died Auschwitz, 1944, age 7.
The experience of reading the names was overwhelming. I was in tears before it started.
Feiga Kersenberg.
And when our students see that they are people like them, the same age and younger, it means something. It means something so different from what we can teach in the classroom.
Both of my parents were Holocaust survivors, both from Poland, and they both lost both their parents, and they lost siblings, cousins, friends, loved ones.
Garcia Birenbaum Weisentrum.
I was fortunate to be able to say my namesake, my great uncle, who was killed in Auschwitz at age 16. And we've been kind of on a journey the past couple years learning about him because we didn't know too much about him. At least we have one photo of him taken shortly before he was killed in Auschwitz.
Reading the names makes me feel like I can continue their memory, since there's not many people left who even remember them and no place to visit their remains.
Our students have studied the Holocaust pretty extensively in school before they came here. And so for them, this was a culmination and a chance for them to begin to connect those dots and make meaning and decide how they're going to go forward and live their lives.
Judith Saltzer, born Gior, died Auschwitz, age 7.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's much more on our website. Join us at pbs.org/religionethics. As we leave you, more from the Holocaust Museum, where victims of the Holocaust were remembered.
Selina Walvis, born in 1934, Amsterdam, place of death Sobibor, date of death 1943, 8 years old.
Liebel Zimbowski, born in Auschwitz, died age 8.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.